News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Listen, we're moving to number two on the Triple Dipper. It's really a segue straight off of that interview we just had with Matt Clark from the Center for Law and Liberty. But at the same time, the phone lines are open. So if you want to call in, 866-494-9866, we'll take those calls. I had somebody called in a while ago before we had Matt Clark on. Didn't have time to get that one. So if you want to call back in, sir, you were certainly welcome. The previous topic was on the movie 2000 Mules and Election Integrity. Right now, though, number two on the Triple Dipper, the case at bar. Talking about some of these legal issues that we just kind of covered a little bit of with Matt Clark. Listen, there's things out there that are being said, things that are being done in the legal world that affect our ability to, you know, conduct life as we know it, for that matter, or to deal with life in general. Well, okay, so the story that we just kind of covered with Matt in more depth than the other parts, literally this past Friday, Judge Lyles Burke, he took the law, he took the hearings from both the plaintiffs being the state of Alabama, excuse me, the plaintiffs being the families of transgender kids and the state of Alabama defending the law enacted most recently by our legislature. The law that literally says it's not okay to conduct transgender therapies, life-altering therapies on minors. And oh, by the way, it's also not okay to give kids transgender counseling at school and not tell parents. I'm not sure why that's hard, but nonetheless, there it is. Well, Judge Burke did enjoin the law in part. So here's the deal. The law made it a felony, an actual felony, to provide puberty blockers, hormone treatments, or transition surgeries to anyone under the age of 19. Punishable by up to 10 years in prison, by the way. And the part of the law criminalized transition surgery is going to remain in effect. So the surgeries ain't going to happen. The judge also left a measure in place requiring that counselors and other school officials have to notify parents if a minor reveals that they believe they're transgender. Because that is something that, first of all, the schools should never put themselves in the position of keeping secrets from the parents. I mean, that's common sense, y'all. Anyway, the lawsuit did result in the injunction on the puberty blockers. In other words, the puberty blockers can still be administered, but no surgeries and no keeping secrets from the families. Okay, so Alabama leaders, according to WSFA.com, story May 14th, which is what? Saturday. So as Alabamians learn this, it said that Alabama leaders react to the judge blocking the transgender medication law. This is welcome news, said State Representative Neil Rafferty, who is the only openly gay member of the Alabama legislature. It's welcome news because, you know, families deserve to have all the best, medically-based, science-based, medically-relevant medicine available to them. Okay, Neil Rafferty, you're not at all biased on this thing, but there you go. He has his opinion. We also heard from GLAAD, which is the LGBTQ activist organization. And their quote was, "This ruling means that parents of transgender children in Alabama will continue to be able to make healthcare decisions that are best for their families." Okay. Meanwhile, Attorney General Steve Marshall, though, said, quote, "The Attorney General is disappointed in the court's decision to enjoin the enforcement of a portion of Alabama's Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act and is already working on filing an appeal in defense of the law." That's good. And State Representative Wes Allen, who carried the bill in the state house and is also running for Secretary of State now, his quote was, "I'm pleased the court upheld various portions of the law. We look forward to seeing the results of the AG's efforts to have the entire law upheld to protect our children." There are statements being made by Alabama leaders and, you know, others. Well, you know what's really interesting, though, is when you see people, you know, you could care less. Hollywood, we don't really care. Hollywood, you already have your own thoughts. But who's John Oliver? I've never even watched a show. And based on reading this article from Hollywood Reporter today, dated yesterday, actually, John Oliver blasts Alabama law blocking gender-affirming care for transgender youth. Absolutely appalling. Well, that's the cleanest version of what he said. He starts off with basically taking issue and, you know, giving the pretty crass response to, "Hey, Alabama," and he says something you. But then he goes on to say basically that he doesn't believe that God made us in the first place. He doesn't see anything intelligent in our design. So why shouldn't we have a chance to change it if we want to? Well, John Oliver, you don't even come from near the same worldview as most of the people who care about this law. So we could care less what John Oliver says. All right, we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we get back. And also, by the way, what happens if Roe v. Wade's overturned in Alabama? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Time now, 3:36 p.m., coming up top of the hour. You're going to want to stay tuned because we do this every Monday. Copper and the Birdman. Copper keeps things running in-house, and we like to say the Birdman works in the outhouse. But nonetheless, we've got both of them keeping the show running on time. All the clocks are on sequence, and the recordings are in, the podcasts are up, the website is good. Anyway, the bottom line is I appreciate what they do, and I also appreciate their perspective. So we're going to go with Copper and the Birdman at top of the hour. Hey, listen, I'm going to, Copper, go ahead, by the way, and get clip one good to go there. You ready for it? You just, okay, good to go. I see it on the board now. Thank you. Talking about abortion, let me just tell you. Alabama, we've said it on the show multiple times, Alabama has one of the most solid abortion laws in the nation right now, sitting on the books. Well, what happens if Roe v. Wade is overturned? We've talked about it some on the case on the show before, but the case that is currently sitting before the Supreme Court, the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Center, I believe it is, the Mississippi case, the one that we have the leaked opinion on. If they come out with an opinion that rules in favor of Dobbs and at the same time does away with Roe v. Wade, all right, so what happens to Alabama's law? You may recall that a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Friday week, we actually had Eric Johnston, an attorney, on the show. He's the one that authored Alabama's current law. Then the following Monday, we had State Representative Terry Collins on. She's the person, the representative who carried the law, the sponsor of it in the House, and is really the champion of that particular bill. So the Montgomery Advertiser, in a story dated May the 4th, so we're looking at what, 12 days ago. If the U.S. Supreme Court intends to overturn Roe v. Wade, as the leaked draft opinion suggests, it says, abortion will almost certainly become illegal in Alabama in all but a handful of cases. It says Robin Marty, who is the operations director for the West Alabama Women's Center in Tuscaloosa, one of only three clinics in the state providing services, said it will only mean the end of legal abortion. Women, she said, will seek ways to end pregnancies. Well, we can't stop people from breaking the law. And it's interesting to me, how many other places in the law do you know where we have set things up in such a way because we're fearful that people will do it the wrong way, so we provide them a way to do what used to be illegal, so it's no longer illegal. I'm just saying, modifying behavior usually means you try to stop something with the law. Providing somebody a cleaner way to do that which was otherwise deemed bad before is not usually the way we practice. All right, well, it says this in this article for the Montgomery Advertiser. It says, and this, by the way, it's written by Brian Lyman, who's a nice guy. I know Brian Lyman, but he's also very liberal. It says, a ban in Alabama would affect poor women and women of color the most. According to statistics compiled by the Department of Public Health, non-white women made up 68% of all abortions in the state in 2019. Department of Public Health does not keep data on income levels in abortion, but a Guttmacher Institute study from 2017 found that women earning below the federal poverty level made up 49% of all abortion patients in 2014. Well, let me ask you this. If this impacts women of color, it says, and poor women the most, doesn't that also mean that by not having this law that we're allowing people to prey upon unborn children of color? Doesn't that mean that we are not giving kids of color a fighting chance? I mean, what's amazing to me is when people write these articles, they completely discount. You can always tell their life view here. because they completely discount the child itself. They literally go at it strictly from the standpoint of, well, it's, you know, it's the mother, the mother's right to choose, the mother's life, the mother's going to have to get a job, the mother's going to... I got news. Shouldn't the child have a say too? Do you know we have a law in Alabama that if you murder a pregnant woman, you can be found guilty of double homicide? So we already recognize in Alabama law that that child in the womb is a child in the womb. Then there's clip one, copper clip one. So listen, clip one, this is the guy that runs Huntsville's abortion clinic. His name escapes me right here at the top of my head. But listen to how he describes in about a minute and a half how difficult it's going to be for people if Roe v. Wade is overturned. Copper, go ahead.
The Supreme Court will do everything they could to strike down Roe v. Wade.
So that's just utterly ridiculous. I mean, it's been a constant attack, and this has always been their end result.
Dalton Johnson of the Alabama Women's Center in Huntsville feared that this day would come. He feared that many women who seek a safe haven and the privacy of abortion would not have it. The center is only one of three in the entire state of Alabama. He says overturning Roe would be disastrous for the healthcare community.
We all know that abortion is safe. They know that abortion is safe. But it's one of those things that they just kept on knocking at our door to make it impossible for us to operate and cause us basically financial destruction.
Individual states will decide whether and when abortions will be legal. Many states will continue to allow them, but not in the state of Alabama. Abortions will stop immediately.
We will do everything within the letter of the law to get the patients to where they can go to receive that care. If that means getting them to Illinois and other states, that's what we'll do.
Johnson says that if abortions are banned, women of low economic means will struggle.
Just thinking about all of the hurdles with childcare, just the price of gas right now, and time off from work, and knowing that that's only going to get worse if Roe is overturned.
All right, you can stop it there. Listen, first of all, he said that everybody knows that abortion is safe. Safe for who? It's not safe for the baby. All right, so there's that perspective that's completely missing from the discussion here. Safe for who? But the other piece of this is talking about getting patients their care. It's their care. It's like the transgender therapies for minors. It's gender affirming. This is not care for the baby. And that's the thing, is they constantly overlook the fact that there's a child there. And then lastly, the idea that we should not overturn Roe v. Wade because people might have to figure out childcare and time off from work and the price of gas. My God, don't parents already figure that stuff out? Haven't they been figuring that stuff out from time immemorial? I mean, from the beginning of time, Adam and Eve, didn't they have to figure out what to do with childcare? I would suspect they did. So Dalton Johnson, you're a knucklehead. And the very idea that you're just trying to protect your revenue-producing option there at the healthcare clinic for women in Huntsville, I mean, all you're doing is just trying to preserve your revenue stream. You're not overly worried about the women and the price of gas and the child care. And, oh, this is awful. This is going to be bad. No, you got a business to run, and your business model is built on abortions, period. Hey, I got a caller on line three. Let me go ahead and grab that real quick, Copper, if you would, please. Robert from Athens. Hey, Robert, Phil Williams. How you doing today?
Hi, I'm okay. I wanted to remind everybody where this motivation for the Democratic Party came about abortion. In 1939, Margaret Sanger actually went to a gigantic Ku Klux Klan rally, and to paraphrase her, she says, abortion is how we're going to get rid of black people. And This Roe v. Wade thing really is about whether or not they can take federal funds and use it to abort 500,000 black babies every year. I mean, 73% of all the abortions in this country are black babies being aborted.
Yeah. You're right, Robert. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, a lot of people don't realize that she was an advocate of what's known as eugenics, which is basically genocidal operations to basically terminate some demographic of society. In her case, it was blacks. And you're right. And that's awful. Robert, thanks for the call, man.
If Roe v. Wade is overturned, yeah, it goes to the states, which means they're not going to have the same resources for keeping black people definitive minority in their own country.
It's a perfect point, Robert. Appreciate it, man. Got to go. Got two other callers waiting. That was Robert from Athens. Then we go to line four right now. Rose Ellen from Harvest. Hey, Rose Ellen. Phil Williams, how you doing?
Hey, Phil. I'm fine. I'm getting a feedback here, so I don't, you know, I might sound sort of funny there, but I just wanted to comment about the abortion issue.
Okay.
Talking about the man said they parents had to figure out the child care and all that stuff. Well, it's so easy today to get contraceptives. I mean, it's very easy, and they need to think about that before they're even having sex.
Okay.
To me, it's an issue of, immorality and selfishness.
Rose Ellen, your point is well taken, and appreciate that. Sorry you're getting feedback on this call. Rose Ellen from Harvest, thanks for the call. Let me jump on one more before I hit the break. Sparky from Harvest. Sparky, how you doing today?
I'm glad Rose Ellen made that point, because that's one thing I've never heard in a single abortion debate, either online, social media, talk radio. Nobody talks about education programs to promote and help young people understand their options, many, many options for birth control, and stop the cultural celebration of abortion as post-active birth control. Abortion is not birth control, but it's been promoted, and we've created a culture where somehow it is. And how in the world is that more convenient than, I don't even want to name that. I could probably name on top of my head five different very easy, accessible ways for birth control contraception. It's never discussed because it flies against the narrative of how wonderful and awesome a woman's right to choose abortion is.
Yeah. They're going to think at that point you're telling them how to have relations themselves, and they don't want somebody in their business. That they're going to say,
"Well, we used to send missionaries to other countries to teach people in poor countries how to use birth control, because they say, listen, you don't have to be pregnant all the time. This is what you do, and this isn't that hard." You know, and that's education. But in our country, it's got to be education and a change in the culture.
Absolutely right. Sparky, good call as always, man. Appreciate you. All right, Copper, move us to the break. We'll take that break right now. Come back and wrap up this segment, and then top of the hour, Copper and the Birdman. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Great discussion, great calls. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. One of the stories I've got here comes from 1819 News, and I'm going to get to that in 1 second. But let me just tell you, if you've not checked them out, you got to. You just got to, man. 1819 News, that's 1819news.com. Named for the year that we became a state. And they did that because they love Alabama just like we do. I mean, I love this state. I love living here. I have no intention of living somewhere else. I've seen the world. I've been all over the place. I love Alabama. Well, the folks at 1819 share that sentiment. But the folks at 1819 also share the fact that many of us just want good news. Well, they decided they were tired of seeing news that had a lot of what I call the skew and the spew in it. And so, yes, they formed 1819 News, where you can go daily now and get great stories, solid reporting, a lot of it deep dive kind of reporting, calling just the balls and strikes. They're not out there putting their spin in it. They're not out there trying to reflect things in a certain way or deflect things in a certain way. 1819news.com. Do they have editorial content? Yeah, Copper and I both write for 1819, and it's all set off to the side. The editorial content is clearly branded. The news is the news. And they have news on there, by the way, that is not just things that you need to hear and maybe don't want to hear, but you have to hear. They've also got the news that makes you feel really good about being an Alabamian. So check them out, 1819news.com. That's 1819news.com. Story off of 1819. That I'm looking at. I told you about this, I guess it was Friday, because this happened last Thursday. So as we wrap up this discussion on abortion, as we sit waiting, you know, on pins and needles, so to speak, as to when the actual official opinion is going to be released, because remember, all we have right now from that leak from the Supreme Court of the United States is a draft opinion. but it seems to clearly indicate that Roe is about to be overturned. And it's going to send all of the abortion decisions back to the states to determine what they and their citizens want to see done or not done in their own state. All this freak show out there about abortion is going away. No, it's going away in some places. It's being limited in some places, and it'll be just as prolific as it always has been in some places. It's going to depend on where you live. It's going to depend on what your state views in terms of life. All right, that being said, story on 1819news.com relates to the fact that the protesters, the freak show I just referenced a moment ago, is spending a lot of time trying to intimidate the Supreme Court justices, spending a lot of time even protesting at their houses. Now listen, as a former elected official myself, I can tell you, I didn't cotton well to people that tried to intimidate me into a certain opinion. And I don't think these Supreme Court justices do either. So I think it's backfiring, to be honest. But when people show up at your house, it causes a couple reactions. It basically makes you mad, number one. And it makes you feel like, sort of like, how dare you involve my family in the thing that I'm doing in my official capacity? I mean, I think I've told you on the show before, I had threat letters that came to me. I had to open a file at the sheriff's department and start putting these letters, these anonymous letters on file. And then I began to notice that some of them showed up in my mailbox with no stamp on them, meaning that someone delivered them in person. Okay, that got a little different. Well, it gets a little different because you realize not only have they honed in on where you live, they could care less what you think about it. And not only have they honed in on where you live and they could care less what you think about it, they know they're trying to intimidate your family. And oh, by the way, some of these people are just jackleg crazy. Well, story on 1819news.com, and I was proud to see it. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall called on U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland to enforce federal law. Because keep in mind, 18 U.S. Code Section 1507 federal law says that protesting outside of a justice's home on matters that are still pending before the court is a violation of the law. So Attorney General Steve Marshall has called on Merrick Garland to enforce federal law prohibiting attempts to intimidate U.S. Supreme Court justices by protesting outside of their homes. Marshall spearheaded a letter co-signed by 23 other state attorney generals. So that's leadership, first of all. Keep in mind that Steve Marshall is also the chairman of the Republican Association of Attorney Generals. And so what he did was he gathered up the other Republican attorney generals because the Democrats couldn't cooperate. The Democrats don't want to say, please enforce the law. The Democrats don't want to say, you know, maybe that's not a good idea to protest outside their houses. I guarantee you that any one of those Democrat attorney generals who didn't want to sign on to this letter, who had protesters come outside their house and protest in front of their children and cause their dogs to bark at all hours of the night and tromp on their grass, I guarantee you they would not like it. They would be calling for security. But they won't ask Attorney General Merrick Garland to do something about it. Well, all said and done, Marshall led 23 other state attorney generals, so 24 in total, signed on saying that this has got to stop. In fact, the words in the letter, Marshall said, talking to Merrick Garland, who was himself a former federal judge, he said, as a former federal judge and the current head of the DOJ, you must surely appreciate the unique risks to both judges and the rule of law when judges are targeted at their homes. And this is why Congress has long barred picketing or parading near a judge's home with the intent of interfering with, obstructing, or impeding the administration of justice. And we urge you to take action. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Good segment, great calls, good content. Thank you so much for making this show what it is. We're going to come right back after the top of the hour break here with Copper and the Birdman. See what my millennial mavens have to say about headlines going on right now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.